Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today. This is episode number 432. And this is, as this interview is airing, is the month of December in 2023. And I have been saying most of the year that the month of December would be a self-care month for me when I'm taking some time off, for one reason, because a brand new grandbaby is due at the end of November. So I'm taking December off in order to help out with the new baby. So today's episode is from the archives. I'm sharing with you an older interview that I did in the past that never aired on the podcast before, but it's a really interesting one and I'm excited for you to hear it. But I'm getting this ready and uploading it in advance. As I said before, by the time you hear this, it's possible the baby will already be here and I'll be in full grandmother mode. But I wanted to be able to share this interview with you anyway. It is with Danielle McKinnon, who is an animal communicator. And it's really fascinating. She talks about how she communicates with animals living and those who have died already, and lessons we can learn from our animal companions, and even the fact that some of us have soul contracts with our animal companions. I wanted you to know, I know this is kind of out there for some of you to listen to, but I think it's really fascinating and good for us to expand our boundaries and consider things we might not have thought of before. Also, because this is an older interview, I had different recording equipment then. The microphone I was using was not very good. And the platform where I was recording also, I didn't have the best sound quality. I apologize for that, but I hope you can look past it and get some value out of this interview and the rest that I'll be sharing throughout this month. So we'll move on to my interview with Danielle McKinnon. I hope you enjoy it. And come back next week. I'll be sharing another interview from the archives. So here is Danielle McKinnon.
Today, I'll be talking about animal communication with my guest, Danielle McKinnon. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Danielle before we get started with our conversation. She is a highly gifted intuitive and coach who has appeared on TV and on radio around the world. She's also an esteemed faculty member at the Omega Institute and the Kripalu Center, as well as other globally recognized teaching and wellness institutions. Her school, the Danielle McKinnon School of Animal Communication, has helped to make the field of animal communication more globally visible than ever. She has been named one of the country's best psychic mediums and is the author of the books Soul Contracts and her newest book, Animal Lessons, which is due to be released in May of this year, but can be pre-ordered if you're interested in getting a hold of that. And you can learn more about Danielle's work at her website, DanielleMcKinnon.com. So Danielle, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. This is going to be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. Well, one part of your bio that I didn't mention but that I'm interested in learning more about is the fact that you have a BA in English and an MBA in entrepreneurship and marketing. And so I'm really curious to know how you got from that place to the work that you're doing now. If you would just share with us a little more about your journey and what
of
took
course.
Place.
I was going down a very different path. But as a little kid, I was really sensitive, and I loved animals, and I was unknowingly very intuitive. But we the whole family just thought I was overly sensitive, and I kind of went through life trying to desensitize myself in every way possible, TV and food, and you know, I just couldn't deal with all of the sensations and information that was coming at me every day. But no one knew. I had no idea psychicness was a real thing. And so it wasn't until in high school, I kept dumbing it down. And then in college, I started exploring. I was exploring meditation. I was exploring mindfulness. I was exploring mindful eating and various other things. And then out of college, I was married by this time, and my dog got sick. And at the time, I was working in project management in the marketing department at a telecom company. We'd just done a great IPO. I finished grad school. You know, I'm on this big track, you know, thinking I want to start my own business, but loving, not actually that's not true, not loving, but enjoying the kind of the corporate world and all of the moving up and making things work and all this, but really not finding my passion there, but kind of loving the thrill of the kill, if that makes sense. The you know, that like, ooh, I nailed that project, great job. But the content of the project, I really didn't care about. But I loved that I was having successes, but I just didn't feel totally fulfilled. So my dog got very sick, and she was just a little puppy. We didn't know what was wrong with her. We'd only had her for a few months. She was at the vet for, I think she was on her fourth day, and I was trying to blow off some steam, and I went to the gym. And on the way out of the gym, I ran into a friend who said, hey, well, if she's sick, why don't you take her to the pet psychic that is in town? And I kind of went, pet psychic? What? Because growing up, that was not a part of my life. I grew up in Michigan. There was no one talking about that stuff. And my mom was very concrete, you know, and intuition and psychic and animals talking, you know, that wasn't even like considered a thing. So I, being the type A go-getter person I am, went, yes, I'm going to the pet psychic, and literally had my husband and my dog in front of that pet psychic the next day. It was, I know, I like to work fast. So it was in that session with that pet psychic that he nailed what was going on, and he actually ended up helping us. He told us that she was saying that she was sick because she'd eaten corn cobs and she wasn't able to pass the corn cobs. Well, why'd she eat the corn cobs? Because she'd been so nervous and anxious because my husband and I had been fighting over my mother. And we weren't fighting over my mother. We were fighting over my mother-in-law, but it didn't matter. I was like, oh, my God, this is it. This is right. I need to do this with my life. This is what I want to do. Like, project management went pretty quickly out the window.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, it was just like the snap of thing, like, this is it. I've got to do this. And I realized I've been doing it my whole life, and I'd been told by those around me that it wasn't real. You know, you don't know what your dog is thinking. You don't know what your hamster is saying. And I'd be like, yes, I do. But I even, because of what culture says, our culture says, I even thought that I was making it up. But watching this man work with my dog and having him be so right and then having her get better as a result of our session, I knew that this was real. I could do it. I wanted to do it. And I kind of set out and start my business then. But it took me a good 6 years until I went full time and left the corporate world. Because that's kind of a scary thing to do. I had the MBA salary, you know, like that's a different world than I'm going to sit in my home office and talk to a dog and a person on my phone.
Yeah, it sounds like you had the tools to start a business of your own, but it was in such an unusual field that would take a little time to actually build it and make it happen.
And I had to get over the fear too.
Yeah.
You know, like my family, I did start my business, but it was part-time, and I would send out a newsletter. And my mom would call me, oh, Danielle, did you send that to anybody other than me? Please don't. So you know, I didn't necessarily have the support of my family or like back then, no one was really, this was not a thing, you know.
Yeah,
now there's a whole community. There's people all across. It's really cool how accessible it is now. It was not then. So there was a lot of fear of being different, fear of changing the financial situation, fear that I couldn't do it, that I had to overcome. But the cool thing is, in the end, it was my excitement and my passion that won out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking, it's such a great story of how your puppy actually played a key role in helping you shift gears and find your new track, your puppy's illness. And that's really sweet.
And that's actually kind of the crux of all of my work, that animals do play roles for us at that deep level and helping us grow and shift and become the best people we can be.
Hmm.
So she did it right there.
Yeah, she did. It reminds me, I had a dog a number of years ago, and I've always been a quiet person, but with a lot of repressed anger under the surface. And so my dog would have these episodes of just going crazy, barking and just being fierce with people. And it finally dawned on me, I couldn't seem to figure it out, because otherwise he'd be mild-mannered and calm. But just at times, he would just burst out with this terrible, vicious, vicious anger and chasing people. And suddenly I realized, oh, he's expressing the anger that I'm not expressing. It was suddenly became so clear to me, like, wow, everything that I'm holding inside is what he is putting out into the world. So he made me look at myself, and it was really amazing. I just remember the day that dawned on me, like, this is actually me. This is my energy that's coming through him. It's not something wrong with him. And so I don't know if that's something common that you see.
Yeah, actually, in my work, I wouldn't say he was expressing the energy you're holding. I would say he's mirroring what you're doing to show you, hey, this is what you're doing. Because you, like you said, you have that an anger that bursts forth sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he was showing you what that looked like in order to give you an opportunity to view it and go, oh, yeah, that's not what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
So they mirror, and they don't, it's not always done through mirroring, but I would say mirroring, probably like a third of the time, animals will mirror the part of us that we need to work on. So you'll get an anxious cat with an anxious human. You'll get a stubborn horse with a stubborn human, that kind of thing. And it can be really frustrating, right? All you're trying, you want your dog to behave and not do this anymore. And so it almost like drives you into the behavior even more. Until you stop and become conscious and go, what's going on here and what does this mean? And you actually look at the lesson behind the situation.
That's so true, because what I started doing with my dog then was, holding him back even more and becoming anxious when a stranger would be, you know, we'd see a stranger out on the path and I'd instantly become fearful, you know, and hold the leash even tighter and pull him away.
Yep.
And I was actually making it so much worse because then.
Absolutely.
Because of all of my fear. And so, yeah, that's very interesting. Well, you've written about the soul contract that exists between humans and their pets, and so I was wondering if you would go into that more deeply and talk about that and how you became aware of it. And
Well, let me start with how I became aware of it, because that kind of tells the story nicely about what these things really are, these agreements between us and our animals. In those 6 years that I was kind of resisting and freaking out at going full-time in this work and clinging desperately to the corporate world, the animals were leading me. They were pushing me, and there was this kind of overall theme, like, Danielle, get out into the world. Danielle, go full-time. But they were not just pushing me out into the world. They wanted me out into the world in a certain way. So when I first started doing animal communication, I looked at it as a way to fix a problem with an animal, right? You have an mm-hmm. aggressive dog, bring him to me. I will figure out what's going on, and I'll tell him to stop doing it, and we'll be good to go, right? I will mm-hmm. fix this. And so that, to me, seemed like the best way to do animal communication. This is a problem-solving technique. However, none of the animals agreed with me.
I was going to say that. That sounds so much like the corporate, the Western corporate mindset.
Right?
In a way too.
Well, I wonder why. And it was also the more mainstream way of being, right? Like,
yes.
There's a problem. We need to fix it. What steps do we need to do? Done. Like, you know, and so it almost, like, made me feel safe to do it that way, because then I was being an animal communicator, but I was being a regular animal communicator working in a way that everybody understood. Mm-hmm. So as I worked with more and more animals, they would do things like, you know, I was, all right, why are you being aggressive? You know, and the animal would say things like, well, I'm being aggressive because she's being aggressive. Or, I'm being aggressive because she doesn't have any aggressiveness in her and she needs to learn how to become bigger and more empowered and stand up for herself. You know, whatever they were saying. But then that presented a problem, because it meant that I then needed to go back to this person who just wanted me to fix their pet and say, so your cat is telling me that you don't stand up for yourself at all, and like that's not what I wanted to be doing. Can you imagine doing that? Like having to tell the person now about themselves when they came to you for a totally different, for their animal?
Exactly, because the last thing they were looking for was to information about themselves that they would have to go within. And
right. I don't want to go within, just fix my dog. So I didn't want to do that. So I resisted and resisted. And finally, it came to a point where the readings really weren't going as well as they could, because I was just basically trying to block stuff out and make things happen the way I thought they should. Like, no, don't you have a fear of mailmen, you know, or whatever, to like, I'm trying to like force an answer here. It's that, right? And so, you know, you don't get great results in a situation like this when you can't allow, when you can't go with the flow, when your fears are leading the way. My fears were leading the way. So finally, I came to this place where I was working with this dog, Jesus the Chihuahua, and yep, and I, you know, I'm still resisting this other level of work. I just wanted to be regular. You know, let me be a regular weird person. So Jesus's human mom brings Jesus to me, and this is actually all over the phone, but she says, okay, he's peeing in this plant in the kitchen. And he needs to stop. It's causing problems. Nobody likes it. I don't know what's wrong with him. Da, 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 da. So I'm like, okay, I can do this. I'm going to figure out what's wrong with him and fix it. Like, I'm all confident. Here we go. Again, this is the type A controlling part of me. We're going to nail this thing.
Yeah.
So I go in.
This should be a simple problem.
Right. And literally, I get in there, when I say I get in there, you know, I connect with him in my head, and I start talking with him, and well, what's up with the peeing in the plant? Do you not know where outside is? And he kind of went, yeah, I know where outside is. Is it too far for you to go? No, it's not too far for me to go. Do you have a urinary tract? No, I don't have it. Like, he was kind of over me. You know, I was talking to him like he was not very smart. Do you not know where outside is? I mean, the dog was like 6 or 7. Of course he knows how to go to the bathroom outside. My attitude of speaking with this animal, connecting with this animal, was very much that he was below me, that I had the power to fix all of this, that I was the one who was going to come up with the answers, and then he would need to do what I said. But he was... That was not going to happen, because that was not his plan. And so he ended, like, you can't control animals. In little Chihuahua, he couldn't do what he wants.
I'm sure that's true.
Right, so he kind of was slapping me around. So he goes, finally, after asking him it was like playing 20 questions. I was asking him every possible, idea that I could come up with about why he was peeing in the plant. I had this idea. Oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask him, why is he peeing in the plant? Oh, a light bulb goes off in my head. So I ask him, and he says, I'm peeing in the plant because there is violence in the home, and especially in the kitchen, and I don't like it, and I want my human to start taking care of herself. So whenever that violence is going on, I pee in the plant to let her know that this is one of those times when she needs to start taking care of herself and standing up for herself.
Wow.
Not in any way what I expected to hear. And I went, I don't want to tell her that. You know, this is a huge thing. This poor woman just wants me to fix her dog, and now I have to tell her that I know that she's being abused by her husband? Like, that's not where I wanted to go. It's not how I wanted this to go. So I said, I don't want to tell her that. I don't feel comfortable. It doesn't feel safe. She does not look like, this is not what I want from this reading. And he insisted, he basically pushed me, this little Chihuahua pushed me, and I said, well, fine, tell me how I can tell her in a way that she can hear it, because what words do I use? I don't feel comfortable saying abuse. And he said, stick with the energy. So what I ended up telling her was that he would pee in the plant when the energy in the kitchen went through those times where it got really hard and really angry, and that those times when the energy was like that, those are the times when she needed to take care of herself and stand up for herself, and he would continue to pee in the plant to remind her of this until she started doing that. And that felt much better to me. And for me, that ended up being the beginning of me opening to this idea that these animals are working at this very deep level. They're willing to sacrifice themselves. I mean, Jesus is definitely putting himself in danger if there's an abusive man in the kitchen and he's doing something that nobody wants him to be doing. The dog is. So they're putting themselves in danger. They're being annoying. They're doing whatever they can to get our attention and to draw us into looking at ourselves in a new way, into working at on ourselves and growing ourselves. So that is really how I came into this. It wasn't my plan. It wasn't what I wanted to do. But the animals keep going there. And over the years, they've taught me about how they work kind of in a it's almost like a subconscious way, but it's still very conscious. It seems subconscious to us because we're not aware of it unless we're taught to be aware of it. But they actually know what lessons we're here to work on as humans. You know, a lot of people are here to work on standing up for themselves or believing in themselves or having confidence or believing that they are lovable. You know, whatever that lesson is that you came here to work on, the animal in your life is going to find a way to cultivate some type of learning in you so that you can move forward in getting that lesson.
Well, I love it that Jesus not only gave you the information that you needed about his owner, but he even showed you how to communicate. Yeah, he made you do it. He showed you how to communicate about it in the least threatening way possible, because he had that much understanding of the situation that you could even
tap
into that.
You know what's interesting, though? He told me what words to use so that I felt safe saying those words, but animals naturally give us the information in the words that their humans can handle or the human involved can handle. So looking back, I realized it was only my stuff, which is the reason why he translated it into different wording. She could have heard it the other way.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. I know, because they're always helping and teaching and guiding us. It's the coolest thing.
Wow. So that, you know, that just opens up, kind of blows my mind because I remember picking out our dog as a puppy and that sense of knowing that puppy is the right dog for us. That's the one we have to have. And I've always wondered about that. Like, what made me think that? Like, why did I think that dog out of, you know, there was a litter of eight, and why was this one the one that I needed to have? Why did that I feel that connection? But it kind of makes sense that there's something deeper going on in that whole process.
The way they've explained it to me, the animals have explained it to me, is that there is a process that goes on before we incarnate, where so your soul says, you know what, I'm going to work on, I don't know, believing that I'm awesome in this upcoming lifetime. Right, I'm going to work on believing in myself and believing I can do the things I set out to do. I'm going to work on that. That's the lesson I have. So a lot of your life will kind of challenge that thought or make you think you're not worthy or awesome. So what happens is you and this dog, the souls kind of come together prior to incarnation, and the dog soul goes, hey, I'll help you work on that. And your soul goes, all right, cool. See you in a little bit. And it's not from what they've told me, this preordained thing. Meaning, all that's known is that you and this animal are going to come together to work together in some way to further this lesson for you in this lifetime. But the details of it, how, when, where, how long, the depths of the connection, these are all determined based on, basically because of free will, based on what's happening in that moment when it happens.
Mm-hmm. So is this why some of us are dog people and some of us are cat people and some love horses? I mean, is that something that we kind of bring with us, that affinity or connection to certain types of animals?
What an interesting question. such an interesting question. I would say no, because it's really not about, the easiest way to say it is you have an agreement, you have a soul contract with every single animal that you come into contact with in your entire life, not just domesticated animals, but horses and mice and the tick that was on your dog, and all of them you have this agreement with. They all present an opportunity. So you may have. So my answer would be no. I've never thought about it before, but it feels like a no because we have contracts with so many.
Yeah, so it doesn't mean that we don't have contracts with other animals. just because we have a preference for one animal doesn't mean, oh, no other animal is going to connect with me. Only dogs, that's it. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's kind of crazy when you think about it. If every single animal is here to help you learn, we are getting a lot of assistance in evolving. And it's a bummer that many of us are ignoring that assistance. You know, we don't realize, oh, that is assistance. That's an opportunity for me to learn. I don't need to run away screaming.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the spider, you know, the spider where someone's like, no, and they run away. No, there's something there for you to receive from the spider.
And what an interesting mindset shift when we begin to look at it that way. And even, you said even, you know, the mouse in the basement that annoys me or that I'm terrified of, you know, that to stop and view it differently. What could I learn from this?
Yeah, because that mouse is there for a reason. And you made this agreement a long time ago for this mouse to show up. Yeah, it's been
crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, I'm wondering too, can pet owners learn to communicate themselves with their own pets more deeply, or do they have to already have some sort of psychic ability for that to happen?
Everybody can learn to communicate with animals intuitively or lovingly, deeply. So there's intuitively, like I teach in my classes, you know, here's how you connect in, here's how you receive the information, da da da. But there's also not going to school and just, well, I know what he's thinking. He knows what I'm thinking. Like where you're just in sync. That everybody can learn some type of connection with animals because we naturally have it. When I was born, I came into this lifetime with a little bit of an extra connection, and I think it's because this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I kind of needed to be a little bit more open than other people. But even people who come to me saying, I have no abilities, I can't do anything, I only just found out this was a thing a few days ago, they can still do it. Isn't that cool? Everybody can do it.
So it's really having the awareness and then taking the time, like the patience, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. sit in that connection and develop it.
Which is just like anything, right? I want to learn how to cook. All right, I've got to take the time to learn how to cook. We're not born knowing how to cook, though. We are born knowing how to do this. It's just that our society, you know, usually shuts it down, says we're crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm also curious to know if you've experienced communications around the dying process for animals and even after death. Is that something that you're also tapped into?
Yeah, and that's actually something I'm going to talk a lot about in the conference because it's a really cool phenomenon that happens. I have a lot of people who contact me because they think it might be time. It might be time for their animal to cross. And so I do a lot of connecting with an animal to say, hey, is it time? And animals have no problem saying no, of course, but they also have no problem saying, yes, it's time. It's time for me to cross over. They don't have negative feelings surrounding dying like we humans do. We humans have that fear. I don't want to do it. I'm going to miss everybody. You know, all of the, I'm not ready. All of the fears that come along with it. Animals are completely on the other side of this, and they, as they've explained it to me again and again, it's just their next step. It's just them getting ready. It's just them moving on. They've completed their job. With most animals, their job is to help us evolve through these contracts, right? So mm-hmm. when they have done what they came here to do, they get to move on. Not they have to, not they're afraid to, they don't resist. I've never had an animal say to me, oh, I wasn't supposed to die, it was an accident. But I've had plenty of people tell me, I talked to another animal communicator, or I talked to so-and-so, and they said he wasn't supposed to die, it was an accident. And then I get in there and I talk to the animal, and the animal's like, no, I knew. I planned this whole thing out. I knew exactly how it was going to go. I was ready. They don't have fear around dying. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's very cool. And it's making me remember my dog again, who when he was, got to be an old dog, twice in the wintertime, he went outside. He went into, we couldn't find him anywhere. We found him in a ditch where he had kind of dug a little hole in the snow and was laying in the snow. And another time, he hid underneath our front porch in a place where we had a hard time finding him and had to crawl under the porch to get him out. And later I realized if I could have picked up on it, he was probably telling me, like, it's time for me to go. Just let me be. This is how I could go. But, and even though I was working in hospice at the time, so I was helping humans. I was helping humans at the end of their life and recognizing.
But that's not your stuff.
But, yeah, so I couldn't see. It felt like I can't possibly let my dog, like, bury himself in the snow and die there. Like, that would be a horrible thing for a pet owner to do. I need to bring him in the house, and we need to take care of him. And he lived a few more months inside the house with us taking care of him. But I wasn't sure if he was living for us because we weren't ready to let him go yet. if that is something that pets might do.
Yeah, I definitely see it happen a lot where an animal will be like, well, I'm ready as soon as she is.
Yeah.
It's time for me, but I feel like she needs a few more days, so we'll wait a few more days. Because they don't have that fear. Actually, the only fear I've ever seen around an animal passing from an animal is more of a concern for their human.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm ready to go. My body's ready to go. But Annie knee is not ready. And sometimes the animals will ask me to help prepare Annie, or sometimes they'll just do it through time. But it is a very easy transition for them, but they are very aware that it is not for us. And you were saying that you were in hospice at the time working with humans. I work with animals, and I do this all the time, and it's still hard for me to see with my own animals because my emotions get in the way. My heart, you know,
yes,
gets in the way. So it's, you know, it's nice to have somebody else to go to who can be almost like objective. It's the hardest thing to do is to read your own animal.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an intuitive read or a heart read or a knowingness, for me and for, you know, the people that I teach, I save that until later in the classes because everybody's attached and your emotions get in there and, it, you know, that makes it unclear.
That makes so much sense to me. And that's so true with humans as well, that, you know, a human might know, you know, I'm ready to go at any time, but I'm staying here longer because my family needs more time.
Right.
There are things that need to be done. We, you know, and so that totally makes sense to me that that also could be true for our animals as well.
How many stories have you heard of a person saying, I went to my dad and I said, okay, you can go now. And a few hours later, you know, like he passed. Like it's very similar with animals.
Yeah, that really makes sense to me. So then, do animals attempt to communicate with their human owners after death, after they die? Does that level of communication happen also?
Yes, that level of communication happens all the time, actually. So there's two ways that it works. One is it is very easy to connect with an animal who's crossed over. To intuitively connect with an animal who's crossed over. It's just as easy to connect with an animal who's alive as an animal who's crossed over. There's no difference. And it's different from connecting with a human who's crossed over. Because with a human, sometimes you kind of don't really know who's coming in. You know how mediums work and they'll say, okay, I have someone here. She has long arms and a yellow dress and, you know, I see that. And you're kind of trying to figure out who's this human on the other side belong to. Animals, you basically say, I would like to connect with this animal, and you connect with this animal. And so they're right there. And if you think about it, animals are very, when they're alive, they're more connected to the other side. The veil is more thin for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not this big deal thing that it is for us. So moving from there to here, it's easier, and then showing up from there to here. I'm sorry, moving from here to there is easier, and then showing up for us from over there turns out to not be the big deal that it is for a human. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I kind of stumbled around in there.
that does make sense to me, and I'm thinking about how our human minds in some ways interfere with us, like seeing through the veil, but for the animal, it's not, you know, it's just a normal exchange in a way.
Yeah, there are a lot of people will come to me and say, I'm so worried about this dog who's still here because our other dog passed and you know, they were joined at the hip. And I'll go and I'll talk to the dog who's still here, and that dog will be like, I'm fine. I see that dog all the time. We still hang out. Like So it's our human perceptions a lot of the time that make it all more challenging.
Mm-hmm. As with everything,
right.
Everything we try to do, it seems like. But
animals are so much easier.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, so this is kind of like a question out of my not knowing very much about how mediumship works. But do animals ever
contact you? You know, say if you're walking down the street and there's a St. Bernard coming toward you, do you ever get messages from that animal like, please tell my owner this, I need my owner to know this? Or is it only if you intentionally make the connection that that happens?
Now, it's definitely absolutely possible that I could be walking down the street and pick up a message from a random animal. But, and this is what I teach in my school, I want to have an on-off switch. I don't want to walk down the street and have all the animals talking to me. I don't want to know all that. I want to walk down the street and notice the sun and be present. So I actually kind of use the off switch unless I'm consciously working. It's conscious. It's time. Let's go. Okay, and now, then I'm on. But, yeah, they can. They have the ability to pop in, and a lot of people, when they're first delving into animal communication, it'll take them a little while to master the on-off switch. And so they will drive in their car down the road, and they'll be like, oh, my God, there's so many birds. And all the information's coming in, and they can get overloaded. Luckily, mastering the on-off switch is not that hard. You just have to know it exists, really.
Mm. Yeah, because I could imagine, I mean, that it could just consume your life and be overwhelming if that did happen. So that makes sense to me. That's part of your learning process of how you shut out the information when it's not the right time for it to come to you.
And then if you think about it, connecting with animals, they're kind of everywhere, right? There's little microscopic organisms that we don't see that are around, like that are part of, that are on my skin, so I do not want to walk around open all the time at all.
Yeah.
It's too much work. There's too much living to be in that place. And then if I did that, I'd go back to how I was when I was a little kid, where I was overwhelmed with everything.
And that makes sense then. That makes sense why when you were a child, you were taking all of it in with no filters and didn't understand any of it or what it meant or what it was about.
We all just thought I was crazy. Now I know I'm a little crazy still, but not in that way.
Not in that way. Well, I was wondering if there's someone listening who is grieving the death of a pet. I just was wondering, how do you work with people who have lost a pet, and do you have any advice for them or anything you'd like to say to someone who's in that situation?
Yeah, I work with many, many people who are grieving the loss of a pet. And it's funny because a lot of people will say to me, My father died a year ago, and it wasn't this hard. You know, that like people are often surprised at the depth of love that they have for the animals in their life. I'm not surprised, because animals have mastered unconditional love, so we love that about them. What I usually start out by saying to people who are deeply in grief is that, as they move through that grief a little bit, as their heart eases a little bit, that gives the animal space and provides opportunity for the animal to start showing up for them, to start sending messages from the other side. But when the grief is, when you're in that initial phase, like, oh, this just happened, and every time I think about him, I cry, or every time I walk by her leash, you know, whatever it is, when you're still in that huge place of grief, the animal's kind of holding space for you. They're allowing you to go through that. But as you start moving within that grief, they get excited to start playing. I find that a lot of animals want to play from the other side. They want to do funny things that make you go, no way, I can't believe that just happened. And it's a really a fun time. My two dogs crossed over in 2014, exactly 3 months apart from each other. Hmm. And it was really very, very difficult. They were both 14 years old. We'd had them since they were puppies. And as I moved through the grieving process, it started to become fun. So I was like, well, how's this one going to, well, what's going to happen? And we started looking out for the messages. One time we smelled one of my dogs. I mean, it's a really neat thing. They want you to know that they're still around, they have to allow you to go through your process a little bit first.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, I was thinking after my dog left, I missed the companionship on the one hand.
Yeah.
I missed just going for walks together and just always having him there waiting for me. And more than anything, I missed the love, as you were talking about, that unconditional love, to not have that being in my life every day that was just always, always happy to see me no matter what kind of mood I was in or no
right?
matter what was going on for me.
True, but unconditional love right there.
Yeah, but you're kind of pointing out the love doesn't really disappear. It's just in a different form. We just can't see it in a physical form.
And the fun thing is they basically still have their same personalities when they're on the other side, so they're going to show up for you in ways that match their personalities, right? You're not going to get a really shy dog who's alive, who crosses over and then starts giving really aggressive messages and showing up here and running over there and doing all these other things. It's going to match who you know. What comes through matches. It'll be like, oh yeah, that makes sense that Shiloh would, I would feel him licking my ear. He always did that. So they just want you to know they're still around. And many of them from the other side will continue working with you. So if your contract with this animal was to work on believing in yourself, it's possible that the animal decided, you know what, I can help her more now from the other side. So I'm going to do that contract out of body now.
Hmm. That's interesting. And I would say my dog shows up in my dreams quite a lot.
Sometimes
as a puppy, sometimes, you know, as different ages, you know. But it's always fun when I see the dog in my dreams and I just have a sense of well-being that the dog's okay and I'm actually okay too. So
yeah, they never send messages from the other side like, it sucks here, or I'm unhappy. Like, they are so full of love on the other side that if you ever think that you got a message that was negative, it was probably more your fear or your worry or your grief feeding that message versus the actual animal. Not once, not ever in my experience of doing this work has an animal come through from the other side with something negative to say. Although, it depends on what you consider negative, because animals have definitely been like, she is not supposed to be with that guy. She needs to break up with that guy. So I guess that could be kind of negative, but not about being unhappy.
Yeah. So interesting. Tell us more about your book, Animal Lessons, that's coming out in May.
My book is about, it's kind of about that soul contract idea, and I teach people how to figure out the lesson their animal is teaching them, and then master it.
That sounds really good.
It's kind of neat.
So it sounds like a guidebook almost.
Yeah. That's actually the word I've been using for it. So, you know, you have to kind of accept that animals are teachers and mentors and gurus for us. But if you can get your brain around that, then I teach you how to take advantage of that. So it's like self-help through animals.
Hmm. So, all right, here's another question. This is just my personal question again, but I loved having a dog when I had one, and I haven't had one since my dog died. But I travel a fair amount now, and I have decided not to get another pet because of the travel, because I feel like it wouldn't be fair to the animal to leave often and come and go. But I don't know if that's valid, or is that more my worry in my head, or is that something that has an effect on the animal if we come and go?
It depends on the animal. So for the right match, that animal is going to be totally happy for you to go and stay with the sitter and do, you know, it'll be great. And for an animal that isn't a match, you're going to have to learn a lesson around, all right, this one isn't a match, and that's okay, and I'm not a bad person, and I'm going to take the steps needed because this one isn't a match for my lifestyle.
Mm,
so
okay.
It really depends on the animal, and what you're supposed to learn from that particular animal.
Yeah. Well, so I've kind of created a reason in my head to not have a pet. It may not be totally valid.
Correct.
But that is sort of, as we were saying, what we humans do.
We humans do this to ourselves, yes.
Yeah,
it's not like you couldn't have a daycare place and a sitter and a boarding, you know what I mean? That you just becomes part of your life that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and that wouldn't necessarily be terrible for the pet either. That wouldn't necessarily have to be a terrible situation if the pet was with a sitter
and loving the sitter and getting variety in her life and loving going to daycare or whatever it is. Yeah. When it's a match, the parts work.
Hmm. Okay.
So maybe you have to open up to.
Yeah, or even opening up to the right animal showing up in my life in a way. Because that's another thing. Lately I've heard a number of stories of people who found stray animals in really strange situations and just instantly knew, like, oh, that's supposed to be mine. That's my dog. Mm-hmm. That's my cat.
Yeah.
I need
that's
this animal in my life.
Yeah. So. It happens a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, so all you really need to do is open up to, all right, it's time. Whenever it happens, I'm ready. I'm open. Versus, I don't think I can do it. I don't think it's going to work. So that the animal that works can show up in your life.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect advice. That's great. Thank you. So I want to remind our listeners that I'm talking with Danielle McKinnon. Then you can read more about Danielle and her work at daniellemckinnon.com. And be sure to pick up her books, Soul Contracts, and you can pre-order Animal Lessons at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, probably anywhere else where you're used to getting books online. So just to remind everyone of that. But Danielle, this has been such a fun conversation. I want to thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was really fun.
So Danielle, I'll say goodbye and thanks again.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
All right.
I love talking about this subject.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Well, take care.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Goodbye.